Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian independent media. To contribute today, visit rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Ride Along Radio. I'm your host, author and writing coach, and ghostwriter, Kevin Johns.
And I am also your host, writer and blogger, Catherine Brunel.
How you doing, Catherine?
Yeah, I'm all right.
How are things in Europe?
Things are good in Hungary, where I am. I'm looking at the window. Good weather. Mild. Feels very nice. I'm well fed here.
I'm sure our listeners were dying to know what the weather in Hungary was like today.
So that is they're like,
perfect.
What's
update.
The cloud formation out of Catherine's window? But this is how normal it is. Like, it's not that I'm here every other week, but I've been with my husband for 10 years. He's Hungarian. So this is like my second home. So I don't know. I'm not like taking pictures of everything anymore. But I will say my mother-in-law's food continues to be excellent. So this is our final from the festival audio interview kind of. You get to step into the festival through Ride Along Radio in partnership with Foment Literary Magazine and the festival being Ottawa International Writers Festival. Anyway, so there's this fantastic conversation. This author wrote the book Reading Lolita in Tehran. Her name is Azar Nafisi, and I'm sorry if I pronounce that wrong, but her passion just is so fantastic in this conversation that you guys are about to listen to. And her belief in how important books are to see the world beyond the politics, beyond the propaganda, to like really get to know the people and the culture, even if you can't go there. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And what her family goes through to be able to like experience this, and then how she came to America and how she, you know, learned and submersed herself in America as a citizen through reading the books and digesting that. I mean, I noticed in this conversation with, Azar is that she's citing book after book after book. So I'm guessing she's a bibliophile. Like she loves her well-read, loves her books, believes in the power of literature. But also it made me think, is there something unique about the relationship of a reader and the book? And I'm going to say this even in contrast to, and this is probably because I don't have the same love for it, but in contrast to watching a movie, like Kevin, you're in a good position to have a conversation with me about this because you love film.
Yeah, well, I think absolutely the I think cinema, it's a visceral emotional experience, right? Like you have, you know, the role that you can't underestimate the role that music plays. Music is such an emotional cue for us. And when you combine, you know, powerful storytelling with powerful images and really strong music, you know, it really hooks you. And I think that is the experience of cinema. It is that combination of all these very emotional, you know, visually stimulating, you know, orally emotional, and all those things kind of grip you in this like in the moment thing. Whereas I think books and literature are really an intellectual experience. Even, you know, you and I were talking about it. I finished.
You know, is there emotional?
Well, I you know, I finished For Whom the Bell Tolls and I was crying a little bit because of the ending. But, you know, I don't feel like, you know, Hemingway is not in any way sentimental or melodramatic, right? He's so minimalist in his representation.
I thought Hemingway was so sentimental. Like Farewell to Arms, like painting the rooms, the relationship, the ending. I could see how people would say he wasn't, but like, oh my God, I thought this man was dripping with sentiment.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
Well, what I was going for was just that I feel like the emotions that he evokes in me are, intellectual emotions in that, like, I wasn't crying because of the specific moment I experienced in the narrative. I was crying because of the greater, you know, like, overarching humanity that that moment touched upon. Whereas I feel like in film, I'm lost in the moment. If I'm emotionally moved, I'm moved because of what I'm looking at and what I'm hearing and what I'm experiencing. Whereas I feel like literature, when it moves me emotionally, it's something bigger. It's on an intellectual level that it seems to expand out beyond the book and kind of speak to my experience of reality and life itself.
So maybe it's safe to say it is in the experience is the user's experience. It's the individual's experience, perhaps. Because I make generalizations based on my experience, and you make statements based on your experience. They're never the same.
And they're never the same. Well, what's your comparison of experiencing, you know, a favorite film to a favorite book?
Well, you know, I would have to say that a film that really moves me will stay with me for a long time, in that I will think about it later on, and like when making decisions or when making choices, I might take lessons I learned from that film, which is exactly what I did. Like when I met my husband, I watched Garden State, and that changed my life in that I didn't want this mediocre mundane anymore. You know, I wanted passion. And then I met my husband. I remember my parents took me to see Schindler's List, and I had grown up in the Catholic school system, and I had in no way really been exposed to what other parts of culture were. And this was one of the big things. That and Anne Frank were like my big first views of the world beyond my world.
Wow.
And so I never forgot that. And the little girl in the red jacket, talk about, you know, the color, right? There's this little girl in the red jacket who you see what happens. And anyway, so I think it is powerful and it is long lasting. I just feel as though I can have a more intimate relationship with the book simply because I cuddle it in bed. It's not a physical thing. Like I hold it and I put it down and I pick it up and it's with me for hours and it's not a quick thing, but perhaps the bottom line is the same. I just feel like, I don't know. I just put it out there for something to talk about.
And I think that's one of the challenges of book marketing, right? Is that really you're not trying to convince somebody to spend whatever, $5 on an ebook or $15 on a paperback. What you're trying to convince them is to spend 20 hours of their life, you know, in a relationship with your book, right? That's what you're really selling, a relationship. And that's why it's damn hard because people are busy and their attention is everywhere, and trying to convince them that your book is worth, you know, 20 hours of their life is a big, it's a tough sell.
But then if you listen to Azar's interview, I think having listened to it, you get the sense that heck yeah, it's worth 20 hours to invest in someone's book. You know, it's so worth it. It's, you learn, you grow, you see things differently. So anyways, I hope you guys really enjoy that conversation, and that's coming up next. But before that, we do have some interesting news. But Kevin wants to go back. What Kevin? Oh, you have more notes?
No, I have a segue because you were going to segue to my new book, right?
Absolutely, I was.
Okay. Well, in that new book, I have a section that talks about this very topic that we're talking about right now. So I thought maybe I would just share that with you.
Okay, Kevin's going to share a section of his new book entitled
The Page Turner's Economy of Fear. Okay. He'd never been to church. His father was emotionally distant and had rarely taken the time to teach his son anything. The curriculum of Maple Wright High School stressed only conformity and assimilation. Spencer's understanding of the world hadn't come to him through direct experience or formal education. It had come in the form of novels, comic books, and movies. Those fictional worlds were where his teachers lived and where his role models were found. In his 14 and a half years on Earth, he'd hardly ever left Maple Wright and never traveled abroad. But thanks to his love of fiction, he'd seen the world. He'd lived a simple life in a small town, but he'd also peered through the porthole of the written page out into the complex swirl of possibility and wonder that all human existence entails.
God, that's so good.
Thanks. But I feel like it's touching on that same idea, right? It's that, you know, I have this character who's kind of lived a small life in some ways, but then thanks to literature and fiction, you know, he's kind of lived a much larger life.
Gorgeous. What a perfect example. Guys, that was from Kevin's upcoming book, Economy of Fear, part of the Page Turner series, which is actually on pre-order right now, and we are definitely linking that in the show notes. Do you have any kind of short URL?
Well, it's kevintjohns.com/thepageturners2, the digit number 2.
Cool. Okay, so do you want to talk about it?
Sure, I'll talk about it real quick. I mean, when you go there, I just have a pre-order bundle going on right now. So the book comes out on July 6th, but if you pre-order it before them, you get a ton of bonuses. You get the paperback at a reduced price. You get the audiobook of the first book for free. You get a sneak preview of the first 3 chapters of the book, along with a audio or a video commentary where I kind of give some insight into what I was going for in those chapters. A free chapter, prequel chapter set before the first book. And there is a 40-minute long in-depth interview, or discussion with Catherine and myself.
Discussion.
And I've been pitching this to the listeners. I think they'll be so interested because if you've listened to the show for any duration of time, I know whenever I listen to podcasts, I'm always curious what people actually look like and stuff. So if you would like to see what Catherine and I look like in discussion, you know, pre-order the Page Turners and you can watch this 40-minute video where Catherine and I talk about the book in the world of the Page Turners.
Yeah. And what a perfect bridge, because it's a wonderful book. And I think your little your bonuses, which are so many, are a perfect example of the love of talking about a book. Mm. So people not only get to the book, they get to have the conversation, which just ties in so perfectly with this Ottawa International Writers Festival moment that we're about to share. So guys, it's kevintjohns.com/thepageturners2, and that's the number 2. Mm-hmm. So shall we just cut over to the conversation?
Let's cut to that interview now.
All right, we're here at the Berryman Pub with Daniel and Stacey to talk about the show that they just saw. Daniel, do you want to tell me what you're doing this evening?
Yeah, it was Azar Nafisi, who has written a book called Republic of Imagination, and it's her third book. It's kind of, well, third popular book. She's written, like, literary criticism on Nabokov and people like that. So it was a great talk, and I was just mentioning earlier, Neil, who's the founding artistic director, he called it one of the best he's ever heard in 18 years of the festival, which is like, wow, 2,000 authors, and this one is one of the top, I don't know, 3, 5.
I'd like to introduce our guest tonight. Azar Nafisi is an Iranian-American writer and professor of English literature. She's resided in the United States since 1997 and became an American citizen in 2008. And both those dates are very important. She's been a visiting fellow and lecturer at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies and served on the board of trustees of Freedom House. Azar Nafisi is best known, of course, for her 2003 book, Reading Lolita in Tehran, a memoir in books which we all know remain on the New York Times bestseller list for some 117 weeks, which is really quite astonishing, and won several literary awards, including the 2004 Nonfiction Book of the Year award from BookSense. The book has since been translated into some 32 languages. And in 2009, Reading Lolita in Tehran was named one of the best 100 books of the decade by the Times of London. Since Reading Lolita in Tehran, Azar Nafisi has written Things I've Been Silent About, Memories of the Prodigal Daughter, and her most recent book, The Republic of Imagination, America in 3 Books. Azar Nafisi is the director of the Cultural Conversation at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C., and it is an absolute delight, an honor, and a pleasure for me to welcome her to our capital city. Please welcome Azar Nafisi.
Azar Nafisi, she's really charming. I probably have a crush. And she has this really wonderful Persian accent as well. She's so learned. She's so engaging. So you can see why she was a very popular teacher.
She is just a fantastic speaker. She's so engaging and she just goes off in these incredible tangents, and you know, she's just a great person to listen to. And I definitely think the entire audience was very, very engaged with what she was saying.
I think that's like falling in love. You just see something there that is very non-teachable, and you have to live with it and work with it and look at the world through the eyes of that strange thing, strange feeling that you don't know what it is, and then by and by you articulate it and you discover it. And in the process of discovering, you discover somehow the world, and you discover something about yourself. One of the best ways to connect to others is through books. And books are exactly like your children. You know, they're conceived with love before. And then afterwards you constantly undergoing a period of hope and anxiety. Did I take the right vitamins? Is this doctor good enough? Am I talking enough? Am I being too tense so that this child will be too, nervous? And then you go through the pain of labor. And once this child comes into the world, you are amazed, not by where you take care, but the places where she picks you and the strangers she brings to your home. Wonderful, amazing strangers who just by the virtue of being readers, all of a sudden become intimate strangers, because the act of writing and reading is a very intimate and personal act. And readers create a relationship through the book with the writer that makes you, you meet someone in the train who is also reading, Alice Munro, let's say we're all in love with it. And you start talking about Alice Munro, and before you know it, you're talking about your husband and how he doesn't wash the dishes, you both love Marx Brothers. And you act, you might never see that person, but you act as if you have known that person all your life because you have known that. Before I met all these places in reality, I had already been through reading the books. Ever since I was still 3 years old, my father would read to me or tell me the stories, but he was very democratic in his telling of the stories. So one day we were talking about Shahrazad or our epic poet Ferdowsi. The next day we would go to Italy with Pinocchio. The next day we would go to France with the Little Prince, Denmark with Hans Christian Andersen, to England with Alice, or to America with Wizard of Oz or Charlotte's Web. And so already I have an idea of the fictional and imaginary map of America by which I judge America.
I think one of the things I want to add to that is, the saying that Alexander wept because he had no more worlds to conquer. Well, one of the cool things about that is, isn't it wonderful that in life, there'll never be a point where you've read all the great stuff and all the good books. So I've sort of given up trying to conquer the known world, if you will, of literature, and just be content that isn't life great? There's still so much I have yet to read. So I'm excited for the ones I hope I'll get to, and the stuff I'll never will. It's a wonderful world that has more good stuff than one person could ever read, right? So anyway, to keep that in perspective.
What, have you read any of the books, Daniel?
Yeah, actually, I spent the last few days furiously finishing reading Lolita and Tehran, which had been on my bookshelf for at least 5 years, and this is a great incentive to finally finish it. So it's true that she does talk about American authors, but she was raised pretty much in a very multicultural in the true sense, where different cultures were encouraged in the house. Her father was the youngest mayor ever of Tehran. Her mom was member of parliament, one of the first women in the 60s. So very literary family.
Boundary kind of pushing family too, like very, like kind of quite an unconventional, for where she was raised, it seems like she had quite an unconventional upbringing, considering her parents like stations, and like she was saying about her father, who was the youngest mayor of Iran, who was actually jailed for 4 years, and one of the reasons that he was jailed was for insubordination, which she said that she was so proud of the fact that that's what he was jailed for.
All charges of the government against me, except one charge, which I loved, and I was going to lie in my book, because the charge was literally insubordination. And I thought how marvelous, how proud I can be that, he was charged with insubordination.
Mark Twain.
She's so smiley, isn't she? Like her whole face just kind of like lights up. She's so happy, so smiley, and like she's so sweet the way she talks. But then when she's talking so passionately, she has such strong opinions on things, and you can tell there's almost like this kind of like hint of steel in there somewhere. I don't know. Like I feel like if you got her into a heated debate on a topic, she would like not back down. She has this kind of like very sweet exterior, but I feel like she's so passionate about the the things that she feels strongly about, and she feels strongly about a lot of things.
Yeah, she definitely is someone who would get in trouble because she has that personality where, like, I don't need you, especially, like, as a man, to tell me what I like, what I don't like. And the fact that people, women, for instance, everywhere, actually want freedom and access to good things, and it's not just something that, oh, so-and-so, they probably don't want that. It's their culture to be that way, and so she sort of writes against that. So.
People have asked her, you know, this memoir that you wrote about your mother, was it like cathartic? Did it give you closure on your relationship with your mother? And she was like, no, it didn't. Not at all. That's not necessarily what literature is. It's not supposed to be like soothing or give you closure all the time. Like, it's supposed to like stir emotions and feelings and, you know, make you feel grief and pain and guilt and all these other kind of emotions. That's the point of it. Like, it gives you the full spectrum of human emotion. And I guess that's kind of what she was getting at with the Huck Finn book too. Like, you shouldn't always write literature to please people, you know. Like, it's, you know, people want to read literature that they enjoy, but they also want to read literature that stirs those strong emotions.
But the whole point of Mark Twain was that he didn't preach to us. He showed us that racism, prejudice, the greatest sin in the story is blindness. Not seeing, not hearing, not feeling another person as yourself. Once you think they are different from us, it becomes easy to hear. It becomes easy to close your eyes. You know, and he showed us that these nice, wonderful women, you know, who were very kind-hearted, you know, decent, kind-hearted, church-going women, they were, it was as easy as drinking this glass of water for them, for your grand, to sell a man's wife and children down the river, you know. And Huck Finn, when he's alone with Jim, he learns morality from being with Jim. He thinks, and like those Americans who think American individuals are having your gun, you know, on your back, coming into the town with music in the background and arriving in the town with music in the background. No, individualism in American novel is connection, is that you on the surface of his faces, but at heart he becomes a moral person.
He has empathy, and he has a heart.
Yes, and he says he cried. The only other character, the woman there, he says he cried when he thinks of Jim having not having his family. You know, and once he plays a prank on Jim, and Jim reproaches him, and he says, I felt so bad, I was ready to kneel down and kiss his feet. You know, it's almost a Christ-like, you know, action. And that amazing scene, when he knows that he will go to hell if he doesn't give up the slave, you know, and he thinks that, okay, I don't want to go to hell. And then he says, and then I thought of Jim. And then he thinks of all the things that he shared with Jim, and that Jim has been his real name. And he says, my wayward heart, because heart is the rebel in this novel, he says, my wayward heart was just sinful. It couldn't listen to my conscience. And he said, I just decided that I'm too bad. I'm just full of sin, and I'm not going to be rectified. So I tore up that piece of paper, and I said, all right, I will do that. You read the American novel? The greatest people in American novel are not the successful achievers. They are what Henry James used to call perfectly equipped failures.
And we are back. So thank you so much to the Ottawa International Writers Festival for allowing us in to bring your amazing discussions and ideas to our listeners. Thank you so much to Foment Literary Magazine for inviting us to be part of this wonderful project. We hope we can continue to do that. Guys, if you like the episode, check us out over at writealongradio.com.
Or feel free to head over to Stitcher Radio or to iTunes and hit subscribe there. And if you could leave a review and a rating, that would be fantastic as well.
I mean, that'd be super fantastic, guys. That'd be so, so fantastic.
I was listening to this podcast I like called The Fizzle Show, and someone had left a review, and the review said, so I've been listening to the show since episode one. And which means I've heard you ask me to leave a review 114 times. So I decided to finally do it. So,
wow.
Yeah, it takes a while sometimes to get folks motivated. Just ask 114 times and they'll leave a review.
There you go. And if you guys want to find Kevin's new book that's on pre-order, again, it's kevintjohns.com/thepageturners2. So there you go. Till next time, ooh, don't forget to check out our previous episode, which we'll link in the show notes, for June's Writing Challenge.
Yes.
Challenge. Very excited. Ah. Okay, till next time, guys, keep on writing.
# Write Along Radio.
The music used for our Rabble fundraiser notification was found on Free Music Archive. It's called Chinese Blues, and it's from 1916 from a George Gershwin piano roll.